the VCA Voice podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Marie Curl. Our goal with the VCA Voice is to showcase how VCA Animal Hospitals is taking care of the future of veterinary medicine. We'll bring our purpose to life through meaningful conversations about care, our culture, and the communities we serve. On today's episode, I'm happy to welcome Dr. Susan Zobler. Dr. Zobler is a diplomate of the American Board of Veterinary Practitioners and is also a regional medical director for VCA Animal Hospitals. Hi, Susan. Welcome.
Hi, Dr. Curl. Thank you so much for inviting me today to this conversation. I'm excited.
I'm so glad that you're here. And I'm going to jump right into the first question. So tell me a little bit about your journey in veterinary medicine and with VCA.
Happy to. My journey is a little bit different, I feel, than most veterinarians. When I was heading off to college, I knew I wanted to enter a medically or a biomedically related field. Undergraduate, I went to North Carolina State University as a scholarship gymnast. And when I started school, I was bombarded with much excitement about the beginning of the very first class at North Carolina State College of Veterinary Medicine.
Oh, wonderful.
I got the bug too and went on to pursue a BS in zoology with the plan of going to vet school upon graduation. I am a native of South Florida, so I applied to both North Carolina State and to University of Florida and was lucky enough to get accepted to both. For family reasons, I did go ahead and attend the University of Florida. Upon graduation, I did enter into the VIRMP match and was accepted as an intern at Hollywood Animal Hospital, which is now VCA Hollywood. And I did live at home during my internship year with my dad. Following the internship, I moved on to a GP hospital that is now VCA Hillsboro in Coconut Creek, Florida. In 1995, my GP hospital was sold to a company called The Pet Practice, and a year later, we became VCA. Our merger grew VCA from 70 hospitals to about 150 hospitals, still tiny compared to what VCA became ultimately. The growth of VCA continued on, and I've been privileged to be a part of VCA's growth and evolution ever since then. And in July, I celebrated my 32-year anniversary with VCA.
Oh, excellent. I'm going to ask you one follow-up question to that, because as you know, I'm a big fan of internships. When you were a senior student or before then, why did you decide to do an internship as opposed to just going right into practice?
So for me, an internship was one of the best decisions. The Hollywood Animal Hospital was actually my family veterinarian.
Oh, wonderful.
And I did want to go home and live with my dad due to some family reasons. And I also felt the additional educational year would be of benefit to me. So for most of those reasons, I did choose the internship.
Yeah, Hollywood has had such a long-standing program and has an excellent reputation. So that's exciting. So tell me about your role as a regional medical director. You were one of the original regional medical directors. How did that role originate?
Yeah, so I feel I was very lucky to have people who saw something in me, especially that young, that honestly, I did not see it myself. At the pet practice, I was put into a role titled the clinical practice manager with duties similar to today's VCA area medical director role. As I was joining VCA, the original group of RMDs was also being formed at the time by our CMO, Dr. Todd Tams, and he had already planned their very first meeting in Los Angeles. Dr. Tams asked me to join that illustrious group at that first meeting in Los Angeles in early 1996. I started in the RMD role part-time then with around 18 hospitals in East and West Florida, while still remaining a full-time medical director in my home hospital. As the number of hospitals grew and, of course, the VCA geography grew, I moved on to a full-time regional medical director role around 2000.
And are any of that original team still on board, or have they all moved on into other endeavors?
Well, most have moved on to other endeavors. Uh-huh. I do believe Rocky and I are still the only original left, but we're proud to
yeah.
be.
So. Well, I am proud to have you. We spoke to Rocky on a podcast earlier this year. And that wealth of knowledge and experience is just amazing. So I'm really, really grateful that both of you are still here. And for Dr. Tans for getting the ball rolling on that. I think it's one of the things that differentiates us as a company. Why is the regional medical director role important in guiding hospitals? And when you're working with hospitals, what's your major focus?
Yeah, that's a great question. VCA has always been a mergers and acquisition company. As such, VCA acquires hospitals of all shapes and sizes and cultures and quality and styles of practice. But it is important that as a VCA hospital, the minimum standard of care practiced at all of our hospitals is of a level we can all be proud of, and that each hospital continues a culture of continuous improvement to maintain the high quality care that VCA has always been known for. The regional medical directors are the North Star in guiding hospitals toward that goal and moving all the hospitals together towards that common focus.
So tell me about a few of the medical initiatives and changes that you've worked with your hospitals to accomplish that goal of maintaining highest medical quality.
Yeah, so over my 32-year VCA tenure, I've watched a level of veterinary care offered to our patients advance exponentially. I am very lucky as a part of VCA's medical leadership to participate in so many of our medical initiatives. When VCA successfully drives a medical initiative, we do change the profession, and I'm very proud of that. I was privileged to be the primary author of VCA's first standards of care document that I shared at that very first RMD meeting in 1996, as well as the committee chair of two subsequent drafts that have followed as medical practice quality and standards have changed. In the early days, the RMDs had the responsibility to ensure effective pain management, new to the profession at the time, was practiced in all of our hospitals. And for the advancement of anesthetic safety, we also brought forward IV catheters, IV fluid support, and perioperative anesthetic monitoring, and of course, focus on barotrauma avoidance as minimum standards of care in all of our VCAs for all of our anesthetic events. Personally, I do have a passion for complete wellness care being offered consistently to all well patients. At VCA, we are fortunate enough now to have Care Club to help us achieve that goal. To me, the best doctor is the one who prevents disease or treats it early in the course when they can. So I do enjoy making sure that all pets get complete wellness care every time they come see one of our general practice veterinarians. I was focused in adding equipment maintenance to our practices across our hospitals, as well as training radiology and surgical techniques in the very rapidly evolving general dentistry. Of course, today the focus is implementation of hands-free radiology among all of our VCA hospitals.
Yeah, those are amazing. And I've been in the profession a little bit longer than you have. And, you know, the anesthetic standards that you mentioned, they all just seem so routine and commonplace now. And it's just hard to imagine that it wasn't that long ago that things like pain management and using IV catheters for general anesthesia was not accepted practice. And I completely agree with you that as we lead, that leads the profession as well. So you have been a regional medical director both in primary care hospitals and now currently in specialty hospitals. Tell me about that transition and what is the difference in providing that service in each of those hospitals?
Yeah, so over my tenure, I've worn many hats, including regional medical director for GP hospitals and specialty hospitals, as well as 8 years as both an ROD and an RMD for several hospitals. Today, I am the RMD for the East Coast Southern Geographies Specialty Hospital Group. The RMD role in a general practice, to me, is to aid each veterinarian more individually to maximize their skill set and continuous growth potential, and also to help each GP hospital perform at maximal efficiency to provide exceptional medical care and client service. The role at an RMD for the RMD in a specialty hospital is a bit different. The RMD's role is more to support each specialty department with trained staff and the advanced equipment needed to maximize their specialty service, as well as help guide the departments to work together as one team to offer best care and service to each patient, as well as exceptional customer service, and of course, continuing education to our RDVMs.
So how was it being a regional operations director or ROD at the same time doing both of those jobs?
Yeah. So in the earlier days of VCA, there weren't as many individualized titles and roles. And so if you were there, you kind of took on that hat when you needed to. So we were fortunate enough in the earlier days, again, to be able to experience a lot of the business operations just out of need, and also being pretty much the support team that was on site at the time hospitals were acquired and then as they were operating. So when I went into the ROD role along with the RMD, it wasn't totally foreign to me. It would have been very hard if that had been the case and I had no experience. I did enjoy being the ROD and the RMD only because it made decision-making just that much easier, but it was, you know, a lot of work and there are a lot of responsibilities on our RODs. And I do take my hat off to them now, having walked in their shoes, and I totally respect what they do.
I'd like like to learn a little bit more about your board certification in the American Board of Veterinary Practitioners, which is also abbreviated ABVP. When did you decide to pursue that certification and why?
So I first became an ABVP diplomat in 1996, just prior to that first RMD meeting. My species specialization is canine feline. During my internship year at VCA Hollywood, one of the previous owners actually helped found the ABVP board and was focused on certifying others. So I went into my internship thinking I did want to go on and specialize. But during my internship, I did come to love both advanced medicine and surgery, and I was struggling with giving up one or the other. Mm-hmm. With the experience of other colleagues at my hospital, watching them practice the highest levels of medical and surgical care of the total patient, along with the commitment of lifetime learning with the every 10-year recertification commitment that is a part of the ongoing diplomat status, I did choose to become an ABVP diplomat. I am currently on the edge of completing my fourth recertification cycle.
Oh, wonderful. Congratulations. And, you know, I will say that the ABVP, I think, has led the specialty profession in the recertification. The other specialties have just recently come on board with that. And in my understanding, in human specialties, you have to recertify also. I have a lot of respect for that process. What are the other species that somebody can become an ABVP diplomate in?
Yeah, there's several subspecies. There's canine feline, there's feline, there's bovine, there's ruminant, small mammal, shelter medicine, and a few others. The subspecies specialties come into play after you become an ABVP diplomat, and then you do your subspecies specialization as part of the process.
So what's the process for becoming an ABVP diplomate? How does that vary from other specialty areas? Is it a difficult process?
It is a difficult process. The ABVP is an AVMA-recognized veterinary specialty organization. For certification, we actually have 11 recognized veterinary specialties. The applicants can choose to have a minimum of 4.5 years of experience in practice before submitting credentials and a minimum of 5 years post-grad experience before sitting for the certification exam. There is a residency pathway that is similar to other specialties. Mm-hmm. Applicants must complete a minimum of 3 years of postgraduate experience prior to sitting for the certification exam if they choose the residency path. Mm-hmm. Each subspecies certification has its own application requirements that you would then, of course, have to follow. The application process includes the required credentials, the applicant reference evaluation forms, as well as case summaries or publications. Upon successfully completing the application process, an applicant sits for the certifying exam. The path to certification is difficult, as with any specialty board, but as it is said, nothing worthwhile should be easy.
So one of the things that I think really sets us apart is that pathway that somebody who is working in practice as a veterinarian can pursue this. And honestly, I think that's probably one of the things that makes it very difficult, because as we both know, when you're in your working life, I think it's really difficult to carve out time to study and to do the advanced learning that's needed. What's the biggest stumbling block with people who are in the process to get through?
The hardest part usually are the case studies or publications, getting those accepted so that you can then sit for the exam. Most of the time, if there's a stumbling block, it is usually at those submissions. But the ABVP board does offer mentorship in helping applicants get through that process. And so we can successfully get people through if they choose to pursue.
You mentioned publication. Can you do either a publication or publications or case report?
Yes, we've added publications. Many ABVPs are dual boarded, so they already have publications from their previous specialty certification. And so we have allowed publications to be entered into the process.
Oh, that's really good news. I'm happy. I didn't know about that. I'm happy to know about that, because I think they had a case report requirement in internal medicine that was dropped many years ago. And the process was difficult. And at the end of the day, it helped to actually clarify my clinical kind of thinking and case presentation, but it was painful to go through and try to find the right kind of case to do. So I'm happy to learn about the publication avenue for that. So how do ABVP diplomates add to our profession?
Most veterinarians performing broad-based clinical practice are not board certified. The ABVP board certified veterinarian has demonstrated that they are capable of providing a level of clinical practice that is clearly superior to the norm of the profession. As with any specialty certification, we are the same people the day before we pass the exam as we are the day after. But certification does provide the practitioner the credibility of the expertise they have gained and that they will provide to the patients that they take care of.
Excellent. So what can you tell me about the veterinary technician's role in helping in that advanced level of care? And is there an option for veterinary technicians to go alongside of veterinarians in the ABVP pathway?
Yeah, so there is an advanced option for technicians. The VTS Veterinary Technician Specialty Group now offers the Academy of Veterinary Technicians in Clinical Practice with specialties in small animal, canine feline, small animal just feline, exotic companion animal medicine, and production medicine. The ABVP board does support this effort whenever they request us to, and we're very proud to be part of that VTS specialty certification now.
How much did working with qualified technicians, certified technicians, help your practice?
So I personally didn't work with any VTSs yet. That is a very new
opportunity. Well, that's a new thing, yeah.
Yeah. but in my experience, a certified technician or even a very, very well-trained veterinary assistant is the key to succeeding in what we do. They are essentially our right hand. And having a support person, again, whether it be a VA or a VTS, or an RVT, having someone who can help you move through your cases effectively and efficiently and pre-prepare you and prepare the patients for all the procedures and examination processes that you're going to do and move you through quickly and efficiently is essential to succeeding and doing your casework well. I even have, and I'm sure you have as well, had many a technician save me in where they felt or heard something that I might have missed on an exam, and they were kind enough to point it out so that we worked together as a team to make sure that the patient got the very best in care.
So Susan, I'd like to talk now about the importance for all of those in veterinary medicine to have a life outside of work. Let's start with some of the stressors that are encountered by veterinarians and support staff when providing care for animals.
Sure. Some of the stressors are certainly the highs and lows of the emotional care that we offer to our patients, especially in general practice, where you can move from a puppy to a euthanasia to a very sick patient, then right on the next room to a well patient. And mm-hmm. the roller coaster of that emotion is something that does have to be managed, and it is learned over years, so that you're not taking one room into the next room with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Critically important. And the reason I'm asking this question is I know that you have some great non-work hobbies that we've talked about, and I'm hoping you'll share a little bit about those interests with our listeners, especially with regards to your travel and your amazing green thumb with orchids.
Yeah, so I will say that it has taken me years to be able to not take work home with me if I have even yet achieved that goal. It's really, really important that we have people and pets and interests and things outside the work environment to share our attention with.
You mentioned pets. What pets do you have?
So I am a pug maniac.
Okay.
My very first pug was actually a congratulatory gift for getting into vet school. And I now have four pugs that live with me, number 9, 10, 11, and 12. That is not their name, but sometimes that's how I refer to them. Mm-hmm. And yes, I do enjoy them a lot, but they do keep me busy and distracted.
So how does your gardening help with the stress control and being able to disconnect from work and have a mental break, I'll say?
Yeah, so I have two, I would call my major hobbies. I do, of course, love to travel, but I am passionate about growing orchids. I will say it started as a random recommendation by a friend, and I really grew to enjoy it. I was a little surprised that I did. But orchids can be both challenging and beautiful and rewarding. Blooming a Cattleya, which is the corsage orchid that everyone is familiar with, mm-hmm. with flowers as big as your hand, showering me with color for several weeks. It is very rewarding to watch your plants thrive and to watch them bloom. Unlike a rose, albeit very pretty, they only share for a day or so. An orchid will treat you for weeks and sometimes even a month or longer if you care for them right. I am lucky enough to live in South Florida with amazing weather. So with my RMD travel schedule, luckily, my orchid secret sauce is often benign neglect.
So tell me about that. If we have listeners who have been struggling with orchids, about the benign neglect piece, how do you actually have orchid success if you're a beginner?
Yeah. So many orchids actually do struggle or even die from overcare. Mm-hmm. So most of the orchids that people start out with are the hobby orchids that you buy at the grocery store, et cetera, as a gift. And they'll come in a pot and you want to water your plant and take good care of it. And also sometimes you may not put it exactly where it loves to live in terms of sunlight. So learning how to not overwater actually, which is harder than it sounds, mm-hmm. and finding the perfect location where your plant doesn't burn, but it gets enough sun to bloom. It sounds strange, but it is the key to success. And once your orchid is happy, really doesn't need that much care for you to really be able to enjoy its blooms.
Yeah, they're gorgeous. And with your travels, what's your favorite couple of places that you've been to?
Yes, I'm very lucky. I do love to travel. In the past 6 years, I've actually been lucky enough to travel to Italy, Africa, Greece, and most recently, the UK, specifically Ireland, Scotland, and England. We randomly ended up in London 3 days prior to the coronation of King Charles this year. And as such, we've countered rehearsals for the coronation. You're walking along the streets of London, minding your own business, and four breathtaking Windsor Greys come trotting by, pulling their carriage. And, the full uniform band came marching by, big band, as they were practicing. And it was a great time to be there. It was totally random, but we were very lucky. Hopefully Japan is up next, and we'll see if we can make that happen.
What's the biggest lesson that you learn with your international travel?
My biggest lesson is to not over worry and overthink it. We did travel some, specifically Greece during COVID. And so there was a lot to think about and plan with that. Mm-hmm. But mostly just to be flexible and to remember to enjoy what you're seeing, not worry about seeing every single sight, even though you want to because you're already there. Enjoy what you're doing. See as much as you can. If you don't see everything, get another chance to go back.
So, Susan, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak with you. We're nearing the end of our time together. Do you have any words of advice for those listening about how to sustainably manage a lifelong career in veterinary medicine?
I have two things that I would love to share. I would say for those just starting out on their careers to remember that we all do become the product of our early mentors. When making early employment decisions, remember that in the grand scheme of things, a few thousand dollars will not change your life, even though you feel like it might at the moment, but choosing the wrong mentor or position will. So please choose wisely. For me, internship was one of the best decisions I ever made. It set me up for a lifetime of amazing practice quality and also a great way to maintain my own continuous improvement. I feel strongly my success, if I've had any, is due both to working hard, but also to not saying no when offered an opportunity, even if you're not sure what the opportunity actually is. The RMD role did not even exist when I was offered it. If I had declined the offer because of fear of not knowing or being unsure, my career would have looked very different. So be brave. Don't be afraid. You're going to be better than you think you are, and just go for it.
Oh, those are two excellent pieces of advice, and I fully agree with that. Thank you so, so much for your time. Thank you so much for your service as one of the original regional medical directors who stayed with the role, and I appreciate you every day, and I'm grateful to get to work with you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure, and I look forward to many more years with VCA.
Thank you so much for listening in. If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider subscribing. Don't forget to leave a review to let us know your thoughts and share the episode with friends. Follow VCA Animal Hospitals on social media at LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. For more inspiring stories, visit our website at vcavoice.com.